There's a drive. Deep left center field. And history is made at Kauffman Stadium tonight. Jorge Soler with his 39th home run. He goes to the opposite field.
Got it.
Dixon may not be able to reach this one. It's a goner, and Ryan O'Hearn has won the game.
Ryan O'Hearn with a walk-off homer in the bottom of the ninth at Kauffman Stadium. Royals beat the Tigers 6-5 after Ian Kennedy blew his fourth save of the year. In the top of the ninth, Alex Gordon gunned down the lead runner at the plate that allowed the game to stay tied, and that set up Ryan O'Hearn's heroics with a walk-off homer as a pinch hitter. But the first cut you heard was Jorge Soler, record-setting homer for the Royals. That's a franchise record for most homers in a single season, breaking Mike Moustakas' record set just a few years ago. Soler with his 39th home run. He now has over 100 RBIs as well, which is the first time a Royals had 100 RBIs or more since Eric Hosmer in 2016. So break up the Royals. They win. They're like undefeated now in September. This is what happens. The Royals suddenly peak in September when everything has been decided. So Soler, pretty cool. Now we got to get Witt the hit crown, because Witt's one hit behind Devers of the Red Sox for the most hits in the American League, and he won that crown last year. Mondesi, got to give him the stolen base crown, which he's only a few behind, even though he sat out 6 weeks. He had 3 stolen bases the other day. So that's what we got to do. That's what you focus on when your team is 50-89. That and try to avoid 100 losses. So great goals to obtain. But still, that is a bright spot, no question. Jorge Soler coming of age, and at the age of 27, hitting 39 homers, and he'll probably get well past 40 by the season's end. Royals beat the Tigers. You think the Royals are bad? 50-89. The Tigers are 40-96. So the Royals won't finish in last place in this division. They win 6-5 last night. Kennedy gets the win despite blowing the save. Royals in action again tonight at 7:15. Jacob Junis on the hill against the Tigers, who he loves to face. He's 7-1 all time versus Detroit. And Jorge Soler, what about him coming of age? And, you know, staying healthy was one of the biggest things, but he's been fairly consistent this season for the Royals. And here's Ned Yost on how Soler's turned the corner.
It's a product of very hard work from Soler, Pedro Grifol, Terry Bradshaw. You know, Pedro got Soler when we first got him and, you know, lined him up with people to hit with in Miami. You know, he's always kind of taken Soler under his wing. He grabbed him every day and said, look, I'm going to show you how to use this computer so that you can, you know, formulate your own game plan. And, I mean, he was amazed on what you could learn on a computer, and now he's religious with it. He sets up programs and drills him and Terry on pitch recognition, seeing curveballs. It's been a long work in progress, and it's really, really cool to see Soler break that record, but there's a lot of good people behind him that have helped him do it.
So let me get this straight. Soler just doesn't walk up to the plate and swing for the fences? There's more to it than that? No way. Crazy stuff. Soler, 39 homers, a franchise record in a season, and he'll add to that total maybe as soon as tonight. And the coaches have done a nice job with Soler. And that Wade Davis for Jorge Soler trades looking better and better each and every day as the Royals win last night. Before we get to local sports, crazy Major League Baseball game last night. Did you see what the Mets did?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. 10-4. Mets score 5 in the top of the ninth. They're up now 10-4. So they're cruising, and they're trying to get in. You know, they're in the wild card race, and the Nationals are leading the wild card race. So the game's in Washington, and the Mets have a 6-run lead going to the bottom of ninth. That's easy. Safe, right? Chalk it up. Win for the Mets. Not so fast.
Here's the set. 3-2. Suzuki swung on. And deep to left field. Way back.
I'd say it was the win of the year. The Nationals are down 10-4 at home. They score 7 in the bottom of the ninth against the Mets, including the game-winning 3-run homer by Kurt Suzuki. So that was the Nationals' play-by-play call. What's the Mets' play-by-play call sound like?
Here's the payoff pitch. Swing and a drive deep to left field. The Nationals are going to win. A 3-run walk-off home run for Kurt Suzuki. Edwin Diaz has just had another epic meltdown, and the Mets have lost maybe their toughest game of the year in a season when Diaz has been in the middle of several.
So you wonder why you hear this, you shouldn't run up the score, right? Why don't you put somebody else in? Here's a reason why. The Mets were up 10-4. Their pitcher in the eighth inning, Cruz, 1-2-3, usually does six outs when he comes in, almost religiously. He throws two innings, this guy, this reliever for him. Mm-hmm. Last night, you're up five insurance runs in the top of the ninth. So they're up 10-4. So Mickey Callaway, the manager, says, oh, you got a six-run lead. That should be safe, which he's right. And he goes to the bullpen, gets some other guys some work, and it blows up in his face. And then people could blame the manager. Why did blame the guys that are paid millions of dollars to get out?
It's 10-4.
You had a six-run lead. I don't blame the manager at all.
No.
You can't be thinking, well, I better extend my reliever another inning because I don't think we can
it's
hold
like
a six-run lead.
We're trying
lead.
To make a playoff run. If we make it, we don't want to wear out arms.
Right.
So even if he does normally pitch two innings, wow. I've got a six-run lead. I'm going to get rid. I'm going to pull him, put somebody else in. Somebody can hold six runs, right?
Wow. Nope. Not the Mets. Not last night. Holy shnikes. It'll be interesting to see how they respond after such a heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching loss last night. Finding a way to lose in the jaws of defeat, something like that. All right, first full week of high school fall sports. Got lots of volleyball from last night.
Yes, the Beloit Lady Trojans opened with a nice sweep over Russell last night in NCAA league play as they won 13-17 in the first match, 11-19 in the second match. St. John's Tipton, they're now 3-0 as they won both of their matches at the Triangular in Tipton yesterday, beating Natoma in 2, 8-3, and then beat Rock Hills 19-15 in the second match. And Rock Hills defeated Natoma in the other match in 2. Also, Pike Valley Triangular, Osborne goes 2-0. They beat Pike Valley in 3, Lakeside in 2, and Pike Valley over Lakeside in 3 in the other match. Sylvan Lucas Quad yesterday, Thunder Ridge over Wilson in 2. They beat Southern Cloud in 2 as well, so Thunder Ridge is now 4-0 on the season. Sylvan Lucas starts the season at 2-0. They beat Southern Cloud in 3 and Wilson in 2. And Wilson beat Southern Cloud in 3. Wilson was winless last year and picked up the win here on the first night of their season this year. So that happened in Sylvan Grove last night. Lincoln starts 2-0 with wins at the Chase Triangular. They beat Tescott in 2 and Chase in 2 as well. And Smith Center, a 3-0 start. They beat Trigo in 3, Hill City in 2, and Plainville in 2 in Smith Center last night. If you want to find all the actual complete scores of all those matches, you can find them at ncksports.com. Good start for a lot of our area volleyball teams last night. Also at ncksports.com and katycountry94.com, we have our North Central Activities Association football preview that aired this morning on Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Sports. So if you missed that, you can find it there as well. And again, all the latest local sports online at ncksports.com.
All right, high school football locker room chats today and tomorrow.
Tonight we'll start with Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge locker room chats around 5:10. We'll talk with all the head coaches heading into this new 2019 season. Tomorrow night we'll speak with the coaches from St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas, and get you ready for high school football on Friday.
Friday, Football Express, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. We'll preview all the matchups here from the coaches before the game at 5:40, 6:30 pregame shows, and then at 7 o'clock kickoff, Lakeside at Thunder Ridge on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, Beloit at Fairbury, Nebraska on Z96.3 Lake, katycountry94.com, and our live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. And, of course, you can listen to games wherever you may be with your phones. There's the free Z96.3 Lake and also the free Katy Country 94 app, so listen as you're traveling out and about. All that information, our broadcast schedule, including our upcoming games in week 2, 3, all the way through 8, is available to you at ncksports.com. Look forward to high school football on Friday. Also, the latest rankings and so forth and so on. Have you got the volleyball rankings posted there?
The new ones haven't come out for this week. So,
okay, the new ones haven't come out. But yes, the preseason ones are there. So you can just scroll down and check that out, ncksports.com. College football top 25 rankings have been released in week 2. No changes, really, for the most part, other than Florida drops from 8 to 11, even though they won in week 1 over Miami, but they didn't look that impressive. Clemson still 1, Alabama 2, Georgia 3, Oklahoma 4, Ohio State 5, LSU 6, Michigan 7, Notre Dame 8, Texas moves up to 9, Auburn goes from 16 to 10, despite trailing for all but 9 seconds in their game against Oregon, but they won at the end. And then Florida 11, A&M at 12. I go down to 12 because A&M will be taking on Clemson this Saturday, 12 versus 1. And Texas, number 9, will take on number 6, LSU. That's the two big games this weekend, week 2 of the college football season. Nebraska falls from 24, tied for 25th. Iowa State drops from 21 to 25. So there's just three Big 12 teams that are in the rankings. OU at 4, Texas at 9, Iowa State tied at 25th with Nebraska. TCU is receiving votes, as is Oklahoma State. K-State will be in action coming up on Saturday, as they will take on Bowling Green at 11 a.m. at Bill Snyder Family Stadium in Manhattan. And KU in action against Coastal Carolina. Pregame at 5:30, kickoff at 6. Coastal Carolina comes to town in Lawrence coming up this Saturday evening, which you can hear on Z96.3 Lake with our pregame coverage beginning at 5:30. Of course, Chiefs-Jaguars, we're going to talk to Art Haynes in about 10 minutes and preview that season opener for the Chiefs and get his thoughts. He, of course, for the radio network of the Chiefs, which you can hear all season long at home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas, Z96.3 Lake, as the Chiefs will host Jackson. Excuse me, he'll be at Jacksonville pregame 11 o'clock this Sunday morning. The NFL news, there is quite a bit to talk about here. Ezekiel Elliott, his holdout comes to an end. You knew it would get done. He's a very happy and wealthy man. The two-time NFL rushing champion has been awarded a six-year contract extension on top of his two current seasons from the Dallas Cowboys, worth more than $90 million. Elliott's maximum deal will mushroom to 8 years, worth $103 million, when included with his previous contract, making him the highest-paid running back in NFL history. Elliott will take home nearly $50 million in guarantees on his new contract. So Cowboy fans have to be happy about that. They are a Super Bowl contender with him. Without him, I would say they're not. Jared Goff, see this contract?
Mm-hmm.
Jared Goff, an offense that scored 3 points in the Super Bowl, but he's had a couple of really good years, and he's only 24 years of age. Jared Goff, who was number one overall pick in the draft years back, and of course Carson Wentz was number two overall pick, and Wentz got a big extension with the Eagles recently, and now Jared Goff gets his. 4 years, $134 million extension, $110 million guaranteed. That's the most money guaranteed in the history of the NFL for a player. And now you just sit here and go, what's Patrick Mahomes going to get? I mean, Dak Prescott, I'm guaranteed Jerry Jones was paying attention. Oh, boy. Now what do I do with Dak?
Yeah.
And then there's Mitch Trubisky with the Bears, you know, young guy, up and coming. You got Mahomes. We've been sitting here saying Mahomes, $40 to $45 million. We may be all wet. It might be 50 or more. In fact, just give him 10% ownership stake in the franchise. Plus $50 million a year. Mahomes, Lord knows how much he's going to get with his extension if he stays healthy. But when Jared Goff's getting that much money, that's an eye-opener. And I think people think Jared Goff's not that good of a quarterback. He actually really is.
Yeah.
I mean, 60 touchdowns, 19 interceptions the last 2 years. I mean, that Rams offense, one of the best in football. And yeah, they have weapons, but so do the Chiefs. Yeah. And Goff picked apart Kansas City last year. Of course, it was the Chiefs defense under Bob Sutton. But that is mind-boggling numbers for a guy that I don't think people think Jared Goff is a superstar. But he has played like a superstar quarterback, but people don't. It's amazing. People don't get that.
Yeah.
His numbers back it up. But yet, I think people just think they only scored three in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's that, like, what have you done for me lately syndrome, you know, like, yeah. This is the last time I saw you, and this is what happened, so
right.
You're not good.
Right.
You know, but really,
Patriots had 2 weeks to prepare,
yeah.
Too. The Chargers reportedly seeking a first-round draft pick for Melvin Gordon, so he's on the trade block. So no surprise really there. The Chargers have basically said, we're good without you. They've called his bluff for the most part.
Yeah, they pretty well are done with talks, it sounds like. So.
Yeah, they're moving forward. They said they're not going to talk about anything until the end of the season. So
yep.
Melvin Gordon wants to play. He's either got a report or he will have to be traded to somebody. U.S. Open is in the books, and you know, I'm watching last night. I haven't watched a lot of U.S. Open. I'm watching Roger Federer, and, you know, we've talked about this. This is a pretty amazing stuff. I saw the stat, and I knew, and you know, that Andy Murray and Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer have dominated men's tennis for quite some time. Did you know they're the only four men since 1994 to be ranked number one? 25
yeah.
years of men's tennis, only four men have been ranked number one during that span, and there's the four I just mentioned. Wouldn't you think somebody somehow during 25 years would have cracked through and been number one for a couple of weeks? That's insane.
That doesn't sound right, though.
1994 is what it said on the scroll.
I mean, Pete
on ESPN.
Sampras was.
Well, 94, Federer might have been came number one then, though.
That's way too early for Fed. I sure wasn't 2004.
It said 1994, so maybe that was a mistake by ESPN on
yeah,
your scroll.
I think, as you said that, it was like, I believe it, but then I'm like, wait a second, because Pete was going strong in the mid 90s. Until about 2001 or two, I think, is when he.
I'll pull it up real quick here.
I didn't mean to stretch you out here.
1998. So ESPN was wrong again. Okay, that's what I get for watching ESPN. They probably had a typo. They probably meant 2004. Yeah. Whatever, change it. 15 years. That's still impressive.
Yeah,
15 years, you've got to do it. Four guys have been number one. But here's the thing. Father Time, and I've said this before, it's going to catch up to all of them.
Yeah.
And you can't beat Father Time. And so Nadal's had all kinds of injuries in his career. He's bounced back multiple times. Djokovic looked great in the thrilling win against Federer in the Wimbledon final. And it's like, okay, so Djokovic is going to get the record for majors because, yeah, but he's got to stay healthy. And he had a shoulder injury. He had to withdraw in the fourth round of the U.S. Open the other night. And Nadal, he can break down at any point in time. And then Federer is the guy that's been Mr., somehow no problems injury-wise for the most part. But last night I'm watching this match, and everything's going all right. Federer's up 2-1, and then all of a sudden he gets broke immediately in the fourth set. He's down 2-0. He trails the whole set. And then there was this long game that took about 15 minutes. And next thing you know, he leaves, go to the medical tent. He knew they were talking to the announcers about his back was maybe bothering him. And then he comes back out for the fifth set, and he had nothing. Yeah. I mean, he had nothing. And afterwards, he said he felt back and neck pain in his loss to a guy that he had beaten 7 out of 7 times. In fact, he had only lost 2 sets in 7 matches total to this Dimitrov guy from Bulgaria. And last night, he lost 3 sets and lost in 5. And the final set, it was 6-2. And I'll give Roger Federer a lot of credit right here. And I don't want to knock Novak Djokovic because, if you got a really you got a shoulder injury. You don't want to make it worse. You can't win anyway. I understand retiring. The fans booed him, which was unfortunate. Here's something. We go all about Andrew Luck and about booing and how disgusting. It wasn't disgusting Novak Djokovic gets booed off the court. He had an injury.
Yeah.
He didn't want to quit.
Yeah.
So he had an injury. He got booed off the court. So New Yorkers classless now? I mean, because
there
that's
are
what
some
we,
of them.
Of course they are. We know that over
we
time.
We already know that.
Right. But, it's like, what about that? What's the big There should be a big deal about that. And that's one of the best tennis players in the history of men's tennis, getting booed because he withdrew because his shoulder was bad. I don't blame him for doing that.
No.
But I will say that, Nadal has had to retire from matches. Roger Federer last night could have easily retired.
Oh, yeah.
Because he knew he didn't have it. He knew he couldn't really play very well. You could see it. He didn't go after some balls in the fifth set. But yet he at least went through it and finished out the string.
Yeah.
And could he have made things worse on his body? Perhaps. Although this is the last major, so that might have been one of the things he was thinking about too. But I give him a credit for at least going all the way through. Even though he didn't have it in the fifth and he was bothered, his back was bothering, his neck was bothering him. I give him a lot of kudos. And it's not the knock Djokovic and Nadal have retired from matches before. But Federer, I just admire him for, at least staying on the court and finishing it out.
Yeah.
Which might not have been the right decision. It could have made things worse for him. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know until he probably doesn't know until today and the next few days when he gives his body a chance to adjust and see what actually happened by doing that.
Right.
But, I don't really expect anything less of Federer when it comes to things like that. I think he recognizes that he wants to finish, even if he, doesn't have everything in the tank.
Father Time catching up. He's 38.
Yeah.
And I said when he lost that thriller in the Wimbledon final to Djokovic, he's not going to win another major. I just don't think he will. I just think because of the age. I think, I think he's good enough to get to the quarters and the semis.
Oh, yeah.
But I just don't know. And Wimbledon is probably his best chance. Kind of like you talk about Tiger with Masters. I think Wimbledon's obviously a great surface. And Federer can win on about any surface. But he's not going to beat Nadal on clay. I mean, we know that, unless Nadal gets hurt. But still, there's younger players that are coming up that are gunning for these guys, and Father Time is catching up. Djokovic out injured. Nadal's had all kinds of injuries. Federer now, basically injury ended his match last night, although he stuck through and finished it. And so Father Time's catching up to these guys. And eventually there's going to be a change in the guard in men's tennis. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. It's amazing it hasn't happened for 15 years.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing. The women's semifinals are set. I can't even pronounce all the gals' names, but Andreescu against Mertens and Bencic versus Vekic, and I don't know anything about any of them. That's women's singles, quarterfinals?
Quarters today. Yeah.
Quarters today. Yep. And then the men's singles, you got Schwartzman versus Nadal and Berrettini versus Monfils. So Nadal's still alive. Most people say that Nadal's just the guy that's going to win it now. I don't know. And then Serena yesterday took all 44 minutes to win her quarterfinal match, 6-1, 6-0. So Serena moves on to the semifinals, and she's going to face the number 5 seed, Svitolina, who is really good. Serena in the semis. And, you know, Serena's come so close to getting a 24th major. Will she get it this year at the U.S. Open? I keep telling you, just I think Father Time's catching up with her, too. She gets there a lot, but now she gets to that final match or two, and she just doesn't quite have enough.
Yeah.
We've seen it the last few majors.
Yeah, she's set up a little bit better for this tournament than she has been in some of those in the past, though, with the opponents that she's going to have, I think. Because they're
well, Osaka wasn't ranked top five when she played her last year.
Wait, yeah, but
she got number five in the semifinal.
Yeah. I just think the way she plays fits better against some of these.
Zvitolina has won 9 tournaments this year, most than anybody on the
women's circuit. Yeah, I think this will be tougher.
I was gonna say, this is a pretty tough match.
And then if she would win, I think this will be a tougher match than if she does actually beat Zvitolina and move on.
You think this will be a tougher match in the final?
Yeah.
Okay.
I really do. Yeah.
Could be.
If she wins it, then I think she's got an easier match in the final. But I'm not saying she's going to win, but
right.
I think that they're, you know.
I've seen Serena lose to lesser opponents in finals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so we'll see. And there's the pressure, of course, of wanting to win it so badly.
Yeah.
And especially in New York.
And then there's breaking down, too.
Right. Yeah.
Mentally.
Yeah, like she did last year. And a few other matches at the U.S. Open over the years, as we know. Well documented.